I wish to begin by posing a question. Why do you or why do you not serve the Lord, particularly within the local church? Or in other words, what is your motive for serving or not serving? I understand that this is a very direct and perhaps somewhat confronting question to begin a sermon with. And I have intentionally worded it that way because I want us to purposely ponder this question. The response forthcoming in answering this question will no doubt vary from person to person. Some positively, some negatively, and some of us probably don't have an answer. The matter of motive is very important in every area for the believer, isn't it? And the area of Christian service is no different. It is of vital importance that you and I have good and proper and, more importantly, biblical motives driving us. Now, before we go on, I wish to emphasize that Christian service is a very large category. It is in no way exclusive just to organized church ministries. You can most certainly serve the Lord outside of the church. And many do this. And this is a great thing. But nevertheless, Christian service does include being involved in the local church. This is very clear in the New Testament. We are to use our spiritual gifts within the local body. Church is meant to be an active, not a passive experience. How each of us serve the Lord is certainly different. You and I all have different spiritual gifts. We have different portions of the same gift. We are all at different stages of life. We have different callings, talents, and abilities. But despite the great diversity and the many options, it is of vital importance that we are doing something for the Lord. And I hope we are in agreement thus far. But the point this evening is to get us to consider our motive for our choice to either serve or to not serve, particularly within the local church. But before we begin examining this question within the text, we need to contemplate the historical context of this passage so we understand exactly what is happening. The remainder of the second chapter in the book of Philippians is vastly different to what has been presented thus far. So far, we've had a lot of rich theology in the first half of this chapter. But from verse 19 down to the end of the chapter, the Apostle Paul reveals to the believers his visiting plans or his traveling itinerary specifically for them. We must remember at this time that the Apostle Paul himself is under house arrest. He's chained to a different Roman soldier 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And he's awaiting for his verdict, whether he will be released or whether he will be executed. Despite his very unpleasant situation that he finds himself in, the apostle is still deeply concerned about the spiritual condition of the believers at Philippi. He deeply desires to know about their spiritual progress and their general well-being. Now, as I thought about this, I could imagine the Apostle Paul specifically asking about Lydia and the other ladies who he had had that first prayer meeting with in Philippi. Or perhaps he wanted to know about a certain Roman guard who had been the guard that famous night when Paul and Silas were singing in jail. Then there was the earthquake and this guard was going to take his life. But instead he fell to his knees and asked, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And of course, Paul replies, "Believe. Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved." Now, whether it was specific individuals that he requested to know about, we are not told. But verse 19 makes it clear that Paul desired to know of the assembly's state. But due to his imprisonment, he himself could not come to them, although he remained optimistic to this happening in the future. But due to his present circumstances, he decided that someone else needed to be sent, so Paul could find out firsthand the progress of the believers at Philippi. The man that Paul selected is a man by the name of Timothy. This is a man we are no doubt familiar with. Two names of New Testament books in our Bible are named after this young man. Timothy was taught the scriptures by his mother and grandmother from a young age. He came into contact with the Apostle Paul on his first missionary journey when he came through his hometown of Lystra. And Timothy ended up becoming the great colleague of the Apostle Paul. When Paul and Barnabas split, he joined Paul and Silas, forming a new missionary team. Timothy had proven himself to be very faithful, to be dependable and loyal. And it was this man who had a very special place in the heart of the Apostle Paul that he decided to send to Philippi. Firstly, to inform the church as to what was happening to Paul, because the believers were very concerned for his well-being. And then secondly, to assess the saints and to bring a report back to the imprisoned apostle. But why was Timothy entrusted with this very important task? Well, there was some special qualities that were present within his life that qualified him for this task. And I want to consider just two of these qualities. And it is these that will help you and I to assess and then to answer our motive in serving the Lord. The first quality that Timothy possessed was that he was sympathetic. Read with me in verse 20, which says, "For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state." We as human beings are relational creatures. And as a result of this, we have a natural yearning to want to be loved and cared, don't we? This is how God has created us. And he has established various means for this natural desire to be fulfilled. The great necessity of this most basic need of love and care being met, and the great value that we as mankind place on this, is seen in the drastic action that we will take to find love and care. We see this particularly within the dating realm, don't we? People will do whatever it takes to win the approval of another in order to have this inherent desire fulfilled. We also see the great importance of this need being satisfied when we see the great hurts, the great pain, and the agony that people experience when love and care has been absent in their life where it should have been abounding. There are thousands and thousands of people spending much time and money with a counselor or some other professional trying to deal with the hurts of the love and care that they should have experienced, but it was lacking severely, if not missing completely. Or whether that be in the home as a child, or within a marriage or another relationship, many hurt for a lifetime because this fundamental need was neglected. And this idea of being neglected is one of the most hurtful things that we as mankind has to endure. I remember talking to a very good friend of mine, and this particular individual has had to endure some horrific things. Things that we would not wish upon anyone. And what they told me hurt them the most, and still hurts them, is the fact that they were neglected. That they did not experience love and care from where it should have been forthcoming. This was the thing that hurt them the most. My friend, love and care are things that we need so desperately. And it was this that describes, and it was this that motivated the ministry of Timothy. look with me. Timothy is described as one who will naturally care for your state. In other words, Timothy was interested. He was concerned. He cared for the well-being of the saints. He possessed a sincere and sympathetic tenderness, an affectionate concern for what was happening in the lives of the congregation. He made their concerns his. This verb care actually describes a strong and intense feeling. Such is the intensity of this feeling that it often leads to being burdened down. In fact, this very word care is actually used elsewhere in the New Testament, in Philippians chapter 4 and in Matthew chapter 6, to speak of a crippling worry and anxiety. But in this context, it's used positively. But this idea of a crippling anxiety gives us an idea of the strength and intensity of this care. If you've ever suffered from worry and particularly anxiety, this is a very overwhelming feeling. And this is the idea of the care that Timothy displayed. He was deeply interested. He was actively concerned for the welfare of the saints at Philippi. Notice that this care is described here as a natural care. And this description reveals to us two things about this particular care. Now, firstly, it tells us that it was genuine. Natural speaks of sincerity, of authenticity, of genuineness. So this describes the character of his care. This was not superficial. This was not a facade or just a response out of courtesy. He had to do this, but rather this was a genuine, heartfelt care. Secondly, this word natural helps to further explain and highlight the type of care displayed. This particular word is also used in the sense of birth. It denotes kinship, of being related. And in this sense, it describes his concern for the brethren as similar to that which he would possess for his own family. You know, naturally you and I are interested in the lives of our family, aren't we? We genuinely care for them. And we would do whatever we deem as necessary to protect them and to help them. And it was this type of care and concern that Timothy possessed for these saints. This love and sympathy was his motive. He served because he genuinely cared for those he was ministering to. And this is an example that you and I would do well to emulate. Now, as we serve the Lord, it is a genuine love and care that should be driving or motivating us in whatever ministries we may be involved in. When we are ministering to people, we are to have a love and care for them. We are to show or to manifest the love of Christ that has been bestowed upon us. And yet how often it is a lack of love that prevents us from serving, or it makes our ministry that we are involved in ineffective, or a real struggle, a real burden, because this key motivating ingredient is absent. But we must never underestimate the vital importance and the great effect that simply being loving and caring can have on another. Now, this is something that all mankind needs, and it should be forthcoming from we who are the servants of Jesus Christ. This must be one of our driving forces as we serve the Lord. Whether you be a pastor, an elder, a deacon, involved in BLAST, involved in Sunday school, whether you're involved in the catering, the music, the setup, giving, praying, evangelizing, whatever ministry it may be, we must do it, or it be accompanied with love and care. You know, I know of people who have left churches because they felt unloved and not cared for. Now, I know younger people who have left kids clubs and youth groups because of this same reason. And likewise, I know people who are still involved heavily in the church and living for the Lord because someone was interested in them. Someone loved them. Someone cared for them within the church. And my friend, my wife and I have both experienced this. I know within my life, apart from the grace of God, one of the main reasons I am here today is the fact that someone within a church was still interested in me. They still loved me. They cared for me, even though I was off the rails spiritually. Simply caring, expressing love and concern and showing an interest is of vital importance in serving the Lord. Now, this may be the only place that some we minister to feel this love and concern, particularly within our children's ministries. A lot of those children come from difficult homes, and we can show them this love. We must show the love and care of Christ, for it's this that ought to be one of our primary motives in whatever ministry we are involved in. The second quality of Timothy that I wish to consider was that he was selfless. He was selfless. Read with me verse 21, which says, "For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's." Now, there are some sins that some struggle with that will never be a struggle for another. I may struggle with a particular sin daily, and this sin will never be a struggle for you, and vice versa. But there are some sins that are a struggle for mankind universally, and one of those sins is selfishness. Now, we all battle this sin, don't we? We are all naturally selfish. It doesn't matter what stage of life one is at, this is a struggle. Often when we get older, we get much better at hiding this sin, but nevertheless, it is present. And it can very easily affect every area of our lives. And our service to the Lord, or our lack thereof, is certainly not immune from being affected or motivated by the poison of selfishness. And it is this that is addressed before us. In verse 21, a significant difference of Timothy compared to the others who were available to undertake this particular mission is spelled out. And in fact, the apostle here is actually rather blunt. He doesn't seek to be subtle. He's straight to the point. He declares that apart from Timothy, all others were more interested in seeking their own thing rather than the things of Christ. And this is a very stinging rebuke, isn't it? You know, most were more concerned about their own affairs, only doing things that would benefit them, only willing to serve for what they could get out of it. They were willing to sacrifice nothing. They were simply seeking their own ease and comfort. And they were completely unwilling to deny themselves for the cause of Christ. These particular men were preoccupied with the things of this world, more concerned about their own affairs than anything else. John Calvin describes these men like this: they were so warm in pursuing their own interests that they were cold in the work of the Lord. And how true this is in our time also. We can very easily get consumed with doing our own thing, that we either completely neglect serving God, or we serve God for selfish motives. We do it because of what we can get out of it. And as I thought about this stinging truth of being consumed with self, I was reminded of a particular story in the Old Testament. In the post-exile period, when the remnant had returned, after a period of time, the prophets came and they had to rebuke the people. They had to rebuke the people because they had built themselves nice houses. The Bible describes them as sealed houses, which means it had all nice timber work inside. It wasn't just a basic dwelling. They were living in comfort, and yet the Lord's house still lay in ruin. This was a rebuke of their priorities, and the fact that they were more concerned about self than they were God. The prophets had to rebuke this self-centered attitude. And it's this that Paul is doing in the text before us, lamenting the selfish and loveless attitude of those around him. But Timothy is the exception. He's the complete opposite. We are told that he sought the things of Christ. His dominant interest, his motive was the cause of Christ. He served out of a love for Christ, a desire to bring Christ glory and for the kingdom of Christ to expand. This was his motive. His motive was all for Jesus. He exemplified Philippians 1:21, "For me to live is Christ." Timothy was not motivated with selfish endeavors or driven by what he could get out of it or doing it so he would be highly regarded. But he did it despite the cost for Christ and for his cause. And beloved, how easy it is not to serve because we're focused on self rather than Christ. And how easy it is to allow selfish reasoning to infiltrate our motives when we do serve. And we must search our hearts. We must cry out with the psalmist, "Search me, O Lord, try me, see if there be any wicked way in me." Because we are all prone to selfishness, and a lot of times we can't see it. And let me ask, why is it that you don't serve or serve very limitedly? Is it because you are more concerned with your own things, that you are self-seeking? Or too busy doing your own things or too consumed with your own comfort levels? Now please don't get me wrong. I understand that not everyone can be involved in everything for varying reasons. We don't need 40 leaders at last. Not yet. Maybe soon. But I wonder how often we fail to serve within the church like we could. I wonder how often we fail to step up where it's needed because, to put it bluntly, we are selfish. Likewise, allow me to ask, what motivates your service? It's very easy to be motivated by selfish things. We can serve for prestige. We can do what we do so people won't think less of us or people will think more highly of us. We can serve for the applause and recognition of man. And my friend, this is very easy. It's very easy to serve with incredibly selfish motives, and this is something we must be so careful of. We must not serve for selfish reasons, but serve for the cause of Christ. We must be motivated out of a deep love for Him, serving for His glory and for the expansion of His kingdom. You know, it is the cause of Christ. It's because we are serving Him that should be our driving motivation. But let's return now to the question I posed in the introduction. Why do you not serve the Lord, particularly within the local church? We consider two qualities of Timothy's ministry that motivated him. He was sympathetic and he was selfless. And in light of these two qualities, allow me to finish with two questions in relation to the original question. So number one, are these qualities keeping you from serving? Now, are you not serving or serving very limitedly because you lack love and care? Or is it because you are more concerned with what you are doing, what you have going on, rather than serving the Lord? Is the absence of these qualities keeping you from serving? And number two, are these qualities present in your service? Or consider, where is it that you serve the Lord? And ask yourself, why is it that I do this? Is it because I deeply care for those I'm ministering to? That I genuinely love them, and I am driven out of a love for Christ and a desire to bring Him glory? These are the correct motives. Are they your motives, or are your motives riddled with selfishness? Why do you serve, or why do you not serve? That's the question that I leave you with this afternoon. Amen. Let's pray.